Thanks, Liz. It's lovely to be back with you. I'm just going to rearrange things up here a little bit because bizarrely, it's never happened to me before, but because I'm so short, normally I'd put things down. There's a first. Liz, can I just give you that? Can I put that on a... Because I'm just a little bit lost. Thank you so much. Here we are. Brilliant. Lovely to be with you. The sun is shining again. I now believe that the sun always shines in greys. I said it last week, it's happened again, and I've come up with a phrase. I think it's never grey in greys. How about that? Here we are. Some years ago, I worked for 6 weeks in a Christian mission in New York City, reaching out to homeless people, most of whom were drug addicts. And in so many ways, it was a remarkable experience. But I mention it today because of my first glimpse of New York City, of the Big Apple. Touched down at New York's JFK airport at about 10:30 p.m. local time. That was 3:30 a.m. My time. And I was feeling really tired because I'd been so excited about going to New York, never been before, and I hadn't slept a wink on the plane. And once I passed through passport control, collected my luggage, got outside the airport terminal building, I found a yellow cab, that was exciting, asked the driver to take me to West 51st Street, where I'd be staying for the next 6 weeks. And as I sat back in the seat, I was so tired, I just kept nodding off. You know that thing when you keep nodding off and waking up again? And it happened countless times, until one occasion I nodded off and woke up and I saw what I believe is one of those great iconic sights of the New York City skyline at night. It was absolutely amazing. Suddenly I was awake again. And the next morning, after a really good night's sleep, I walked around Manhattan amazed by all that I saw. My neck got stiff from sort of looking up at the buildings because the skyscrapers are so huge and it's all so densely packed together. Now, for someone who, like me, was raised in a small town, it was a breathtaking moment, like nothing I'd ever seen before. Now, it is that kind of experience of being blown away by the incredible sight of a city that the psalmist describes here in Psalm 122. Look with me again, if you've got a Bible, at verse 2. Our feet are standing in your gates, Jerusalem. Jerusalem is built like a city that's closely compacted together. The psalmist, you see, is standing at the gates of Jerusalem. And now as we read through this psalm, which we'll do in a moment, he was absolutely blown away by every experience that he had in the city of Jerusalem. Now, if you're taking notes, you might not want to be bothered with notes, but here's the first point. The joy of arriving in heavenly Jerusalem, verses 2 and 3. Over these past 2 weeks, we've been on a journey. We've called it the ultimate road trip. Do you remember? In Psalm 120, we felt the psalmist's struggles of living in a world that has rejected the Lord. We felt, you know, that's kind of how we feel, isn't it? Last week on Psalm 121, we went from sort of being stuck in this world that that doesn't follow the Lord to being on the journey, the progress of the pilgrim on the journey up to Jerusalem, a dangerous journey with rough and barren terrain. Well, now here we are in Psalm 122, verse 2, and you know, it's as if he's arrived. He's standing at the gates of the city, gone from this godless place on the journey, now in Jerusalem. Now look again, if you've not been here the last couple of weeks, we need to put this into context. These psalms, all these psalms from 120 right through to 134, are all songs of ascents. We've said that before, but Psalm 120, 121, 122 are kind of this journey. And we've described these psalms as an inspired playlist for pilgrims who were making the journey to Jerusalem. So as they were making their journey, they were singing all these songs to keep them going. Now, as we've said each week, you know, what's this got to do with us? We're sitting here in England in greys, which is ever grey, and we're 2,000 miles away from Jerusalem, and many of us will never visit this city. So we might scratch our head and think, what's this got to do with us? Well, we're not on a journey to earthly Jerusalem. But if we're Christians here this morning, we are on our way to heavenly Jerusalem. That is the final destination for every Christian believer. But again, as we saw last week, Psalm 121, there are any number of hazards ahead that might stop us from reaching that glorious destination. And so as we look ahead, we might cry out with the psalmist, Psalm 121, verse 1, where does my help come from?
And then, of course, last week we thought, oh, our help comes from the Lord. He's going to help us get there. And after the assurance of that psalm, now here in Psalm 122, the psalmist has made it. He's arrived at the gates of the city, verse 2. Our feet are standing in the gates of Jerusalem. And through this psalm now, Psalm 122, he paints a picture of how glorious that city is. So for us, Psalm 122 says, just imagine that moment when you're finally standing, not at the gates of New York, but at the gates of heaven. You've endured all the struggles of this world, all the worries, all the battles, all the temptations, all the opposition, all the disappointments, all the deceit and the lies of the evil one. Maybe the last part of your journey, you've quite possibly endured the struggle of a slow and painful death. And through those trials, you may have wondered, am I going to keep going with Jesus? Imagine then the relief when you're finally there. That is Psalm 122. It's very exciting. That said, strikingly, after all the struggles of the journey in Psalm 122, the psalmist is not so much breathing a sigh of relief that he's finally made it. Rather, he's having his breath taken away by what he sees. Verse 3, Jerusalem is built like a city that is closely compacted to the end. This is an amazing city. And so Psalm 122 assures us that when we're finally standing at the gates of heavenly Jerusalem, all the struggles of this life will be over, and we will simply be overwhelmed by the sheer wonder of being there. Now, I hope if you're feeling a bit weary and struggling as a Christian this morning, even this, having seen this already, will just encourage you. And certainly as we take this tour of the city in the next few moments, it should inspire us to keep going. So from the joy of arriving in heavenly Jerusalem to the wonder of being in heavenly Jerusalem, verses 3 to 9. And we discover here just why this is such a great city in the verses that follow. Look at verse 3. Jerusalem is built like a city that is closely compacted together. If you've ever been to earthly Jerusalem, I went on a conference some years back. It's kind of a labyrinth of narrow streets that weave their way through buildings that are very closely packed together. Walking through the narrow streets and alleyways of Jerusalem is an adventure. It's a kind of a tourist delight. But for the psalmist, Jerusalem is so much more than a magnificently built metropolis that delight people on a city break. Firstly, because it's a city of God's people. Look at verse 4. That is where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to praise the name of the Lord. Heavenly Jerusalem will be like no other city because it's a city of the Lord's people, a city full of the people who, verse 4, want to praise the Lord. Can you imagine being in a bustling, vibrant, magnificently built city that is full only of God's people? That's what he's describing here. Some years ago, a friend of mine called Chris went to a Word Alive. You might have heard of it. It's a Christian conference. And when Chris went to Word Alive, it used to be held in Butlins, I think in Skegness. And Chris arrived home absolutely buzzing from his week away. And he said, oh, Paul, it was wonderful. Every day we met with hundreds of Christians to hear the Bible taught and to sing God's praises. Every day all week I was just surrounded by people who followed Jesus. It was just like heaven, said Chris. Like heaven, I said. But Chris, you're in Butlins, in Skeggy. Now, despite my pulling Chris's leg, I know what he meant. You know, there's something wonderful about being among God's people, among Christian believers, praising God, when most of the time, you see, we're immersed in an unbelieving and hostile culture. That was the sort of thing we were thinking about in Psalm 120. So here's the thing. If it feels good to be in Butlins in Skegness for a week with other Christians, or with our Christian family on Sunday, or in our small group midweek, if that feels good, and it does, can you imagine the joy of being with the Lord's people, surrounded by the Lord's people in the eternal city of God? They're surrounded by people who are all living a perfect life because we've been praised, because we've been changed by him, all praising him. With our life and our lips. Now that's not all. That's the first good thing he sees. The second thing he sees in this city is that it's a city of justice. Look at verse 5. There stand the thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David. See, again, as the psalmist looks around the city, the first thing he sees, apart from it being full of people, all who follow the Lord, is he sees that these thrones of judgment, the thrones of the house of David, as he describes them. Now, David was, of course, the great king of Israel, the Lord's anointed king, who was appointed to bring justice. Justice is a brilliant thing, isn't it? One of the most distressing things about this life is injustice. Injustice troubles believers and unbelievers alike. And we feel it keenly when we're treated unjustly. If you've had unjust suffering in your life, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Feeling that, you know, being the victim of a miscarriage of justice, it can ruin your life. And it can ruin your life for the rest of your life. You know, one of the big news stories this year has been the Post Office Horizon IT scandal. Who has not been shocked by that? Hundreds of sub-postmasters wrongly accused and wrongly convicted, and sometimes having spent years in prison. We're rightly outraged by injustice. Imagine those pictures that we often see with other things, when somebody is standing on the court, on the steps of the highest court in the land, just having been cleared of some injustice that they've been struggling with for years, and the relief and joy as the world's media sort of hears them say, you know, I'm just pleased that justice has been done. There's always relief and joy when justice is brought about. Now look, when the psalmist stood at the gates of Jerusalem, he rejoiced that he was there, verse 5, because he saw the thrones of judgment. Now of course, in the psalmist's day, in David's day, like today, there's no guarantee of perfect justice here. But that phrase, the thrones of the house of David, points us to, well, somebody from the line of David, a greater king, great King David's greater son, the Lord Jesus. And we can be absolutely sure that when he comes, he will judge the world with absolute justice. He, in fact, is the only one who can judge the world with justice. He's the only one who sees all things. The only one who knows the context of every incident. The only one who knows the motives of every heart. But here's the wonderful thing, because he does see all that, he will bring justice one day. And so what a great thought. Do you see how good this city is? It's a brilliant city in and of itself, but it is even better. You're surrounded by God's people. But you're not only surrounded by God's people, but you're in a place of absolute justice. What joy is that going to be? And then there's another thing. Verses 6 to 8 tells us it's a city of peace. Look what he says, verse 6. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. May those who love you be secure. May there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. For the sake of my family and friends, I will say, peace be within you. See, peace is a key element of why this city is going to be so brilliant. Now, we just have to do a little bit of thinking here. The psalmist here prays for peace and security in Jerusalem because this is earthly Jerusalem, which should reflect heavenly Jerusalem. For us, as we're thinking, we're in a different era, we're thinking about heavenly Jerusalem. We don't need to be praying for the peace of heavenly Jerusalem. It's going to be peaceful. You see, the psalmist needed to do it because he was living in a slightly imperfect world. But the key thing is, it is going to be a place of peace. And peace is one of those things that we don't really grasp how brilliant it is until we don't have it. Do you know what I mean by that? You know, when we don't have peace of mind, if we're not at peace with another person, when the world is not at peace, when we don't know peace with God, when peace is absent, well, then we really realise how brilliant peace is. And when we don't have peace, we're restless and worried and in turmoil. And inner turmoil is horrible. See, when we're not at peace, it ruins everything. But you can have everything in the world, everything this world affords. You have millions of pounds in the bank. You can have all the luxuries of life, a large house, exotic holidays, fancy cars. You can eat the best food in the best restaurants, have a fabulously successful career. You can have it all. If you're not at peace, it's just awful. And we simply can't enjoy life without peace. So we long for peace. And of course, that is why this is such a brilliant place. Heavenly Jerusalem, totally at peace with others, at peace in yourself, at peace with your God. Isn't it brilliant? It's what we've got to look forward to. A city of God's people, a city of justice, a city of peace, and a city of security. Did you see that in verses 6 and 7? May those who love you be secure. Verse 7, may there be peace within your walls and security within your citadels. See, feeling totally safe and secure again is a wonderful thing. I know people, maybe you do too, maybe you're one of them. People are understandably terrified of being burgled. They've erected big fences around their houses, put locks on their doors and windows, installed security cameras, because they don't feel safe. And there's good reason not to feel safe, isn't there? Just last year, 100 yards, well, sorry, let's do it in metric, 100 or so metres from our office, on Bishopsgate, there was, in a crowded city, three people were snatched and stabbed in an attempted mobile phone snatch. And the streets are not safe. For me, one of the most devastating headlines to hit the news in the last couple of years was the kidnap, rape and murder of Sarah Everard by a serving police officer. The police officer, someone who should be responsible for protecting us, used and abused his position to kill an innocent young girl with the whole of her life ahead of her. The streets are not safe. And then there's international conflict. How will Russia's invasion of Ukraine pan out? War in Europe. Or the situation in Gaza and the Middle East. Again, people who know a lot more about these things than I do, political commentators, say the world has become a very unstable place since all that has happened. Then there are religious ideologies in the world that bring an ever-present threat of global terrorism. Just think of the money and resources poured into counter-terrorism. Why? Because it's a very real and present danger. Now, let me take you back to the events of 9/11. Do you remember when the planes were flown into the Twin Towers of New York's World Trade Center and the Pentagon in Arlington, Virginia? One journalist wrote, if the World Trade Center is not safe, if the Pentagon is not safe, then quite simply nowhere is safe. That's the world we live in. The world is not safe. What amazing joy to think that one day we will be in the heavenly New Jerusalem and we will feel completely safe and secure all the time. That's verses 6 and 7. It's going to be a beautiful place where never again will there be news of someone murdered on the streets. Never again will you say, where did I leave my keys? Do you know why? We won't have any keys because we won't need to lock anything up. No identity fraud, no internet scam. No stolen credit cards. It'd be a great place. City of God's people, city of justice, city of peace, city of security, city of prosperity. Do you see that at the end of verse 9? I will seek your prosperity. In our heavenly home, there won't be haves and have-nots. Everyone will have. We'll all have more than we ever need. No one will lie awake at night wondering if they'll be able to make ends meet and pay the utility bills. It'll not only be a place of prosperity, but we'll kind of prosper within ourselves. You know, in heavenly Jerusalem, everyone will flourish. Everyone's going to reach their full potential. Isn't it brilliant? Peace, justice, security, prosperity, living among God's people, all who follow the Lord and want to know him. No wonder the psalmist was so excited about having finally arrived at the gates of the city. But there's one big thing, one big reason that I haven't mentioned yet, why heavenly Jerusalem will be so heavenly. And it is because we'll be in the presence of the Lord himself. See, that's how the psalm begins and ends. Look at verse 1. I rejoice with those who said, let us go to the house of the Lord. Verse 9. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your prosperity. See, this is why it's really so brilliant. This is where God dwells. When we reach that final destination, we'll be in the presence of the Lord himself. That's precisely why heavenly Jerusalem will be a place of peace and security and prosperity, because it's where the Lord is. He'll keep us safe. It's going to be such a wonderful place because of the persons at the heart of it. My parents lived in the same house for nearly 60 years. I was born in that house. They've died now. All my childhood years were lived there. I was the most modest three-bedroom, end-of-terrace house on a council estate. I don't come from a very amazing place, but I tell you, it was a happy home. In that home, my brother and I felt loved, safe, secure, because our mum and dad created an environment where we would feel like that, where we could flourish. They were brilliant. When mum and dad died, my brother and I had the task of sorting out the house. And, you know, when my mum and dad died within a year of each other, as we walked in after my mum died, who was the second of the two to die, you know, the place was exactly the same as it ever was. Everything was sort of seated where it was seated, you know. In the living room, nothing had moved. It was not different, except, of course, mum and dad weren't there. And so it was totally different. We had everything that we always had, but we didn't have them. Now, look, that is a thoroughly inadequate illustration of the heavenly Jerusalem. But the point is this: heavenly Jerusalem will only be heavenly because the Lord is there. All these other things are brilliant, safety and security and all these things, but it's really fantastic because we'll be with him, brought back into relationship with him, because he is who we were made for. That is what we were made for, to be in relationship with him. And finally, we will be at home with him and enjoying him. And our relationship with him will be unbroken and beautiful. Jesus said to his disciples, "I'm going to my Father's house to prepare a place for you." And he prepared a place for us by dying on the cross, which we're going to remember as we take communion in just a moment. And of course, as he died on the cross, he came into a broken world full of injustice and strife and insecurity, all the things we've been thinking about. And he faced all those things so he could take us to this heavenly home. Think of justice. He came to a dangerous world where he was brutally and unjustly treated. The innocent victim of, I would say, the greatest miscarriage of justice this world has ever seen, because he is the only completely innocent person, yet he was treated so badly. Why did he do that? He did it for you and me because he loves us, to take us to this eternal home of justice. Think of peace. He knew what it was like to live in a world of conflict. The Prince of Peace. The Prince of Peace was met and arrested by sword-carrying enemies who took him to the cross. And when he suffered the agonizing turmoil of being robbed of peace with God, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? He suffered that thing of being not at peace with God because he loves you and me so that we could be at peace with God. Isn't it amazing? He suffered so he could take us to a place of peace. Think of security. He lived in a world that was far from safe. As a baby, the murderous Herod wanted to kill him. As an adult, he was hated so much, wicked men hunted him down. Humanly speaking, he was never safe. And he went through all that unsafeness, if there's any such a word, so he could take us to a place where we would be eternally safe. Beyond the cross, the Lord Jesus was separated from the Father, suffered injustice, robbed of peace, and he did it all because he loves you and me. So he could take us to a place of justice and peace and security. A place where we'll prosper in relationship with our God forever. Isn't it wonderful? So as we take bread and wine in a moment, remember that. All that he did to get us to there one day. Well, that's Psalm 122. Just one final comment. It starts by saying, I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Because you see, although he's imagining being there, standing at the gates of heaven, at the gates of Jerusalem, this psalm, of course, was meant to be sung while you're on the journey. And so it's all about saying, look, just imagine being there. That's what's going to keep me going. And he says at the beginning, I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. So the point is this. We're supposed to encourage each other to keep having that vision of the heavenly Jerusalem. Keep being those who encourage one another to say, come on, let's keep going. Because it's so much easier to do it together, which is why it's so important we meet together like this on a Sunday. I'm preaching to the converted because you're all here. But why we keep meeting together in small groups. And we just keep saying, come on, brother, come on, sister, let's keep going. It's really worth it. Well, enough from me. I've probably gone on too long. Les, I should hand back to you. And is it you I hand back to now, or is it me? Yes. It's you. And then I'll come up and do communion in a minute. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Paul. As ever, that was wonderful. Let's turn off the recording.